From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
John Hickenlooper and Jay Inslee are in. Mike Bloomberg and Jeff Merkley are out. And Joe Biden is still on the fence, but leaning in. We're talking about the Democratic presidential race and what these decisions mean for the contest ahead. Who's doing the best so far? Welcome. I'm Paul Gigot with the Wall Street Journal Opinion Pages, and I'm here with my colleagues, Kim Strassel. Hello, Kim.
Hey, Paul.
And Kyle Peterson. Hi, Kyle.
Hello, hello.
So let's start. Let's talk today. We're going to do it today to the emerging presidential race and some of the recent decisions. Let's talk about first about two people who did not get in, Mike Bloomberg and Jeff Merkley. I think Jeff Merkley, the senator from Oregon, probably realized that there was no way as a left winger he could compete with Elizabeth Warren or Bernie Sanders, Kamala Harris. They kind of had that wing of the campaign and also the money wing covered. So he prudently stayed out. He was going nowhere. But Mike Bloomberg, I think, is a more interesting story because the former mayor of New York, three-term mayor of New York, and one of the richest men in the world by dint of his Bloomberg empire and media empire and Bloomberg box that provides financial information to investors. He could have spent upwards of $750 billion just in the primaries, Kim. And I think the other Democrats have really fortunate here in Bloomberg getting out because had he gotten in, he likes to win. And I think he would have spent whatever he thought it took. And I think that would have meant some other Democrats would be cut up quite a bit by his media campaign. And now they don't have to endure that.
Yes, very lucky for the rest of the field. Although I have to say that I was never of the belief that Michael Bloomberg would get in, only because, yes, he has the money. Yes, he likes to win. But that was the reason why I didn't think he would make the run, because he didn't really have much of a shot, in my mind, of winning. He could have bloodied up people pretty bad. But
why not? Why do you think he couldn't? He was a long shot.
His brand of politics is just too moderate for this Democratic primary field. You know, he came out of the box to the extent that he went and visited some of these states and made statements. He was poo-pooing Medicare for all. He was poo-pooing the new Green Deal And I think that those voices are useful in the Democratic primary. I just don't think there's a lot of tolerance for it at the moment. They want someone that's more to the left. And while Bloomberg, in his statement, or he wrote an op-ed explaining why he was not getting in, he said that it was simply a very crowded field and it would be tough. I think it was an acknowledgement that his positions were not ones that necessarily aligned with a lot of Democratic base right now.
Kyle, Bloomberg left on guns. That's not a problem with the Democrats. Left on climate change. Almost really he's become an evangelist on and a very strong anti-coal advocate. And in fact, he said in his statement saying he'll get out, he's going to spend, I don't know what, $500 million maybe on selling, getting beyond all fossil fuels. But where wouldn't he jive? I mean, you share Kim's view that he was just too moderate for the party?
I do. Part of it is just his closeness to his experience in business. There was a Bloomberg confidant who was quoted in one of the publications in the last day saying, you know, he's old, he's white, he's a male, he's from Wall Street. You know, what more do you need to knock him out? But luckily...
you guys are so... I mean, you're getting close to home here. I mean, I'm a journalist, not Wall Street, but you guys, come on.
That's why you're never going to run for president.
But luckily for the other Democrats, he also seems to be saving his fire for the general election. There's some reporting saying that he's prepared to spend $500 million to deny President Trump a second term, which is real money. I mean, money doesn't always – it's not always dispositive. I mean, everybody remembers that Donald Trump was outspent by Hillary Clinton about 2-1. But Hillary Clinton spent only about $750 million on that campaign, and so $500 million would – would sure go a long way.
Especially if it's aimed at cutting apart Donald Trump on some issues. And if you – I mean, he spent, I think – didn't he spend, Kim, close to – or said he did – close to $100 million in the midterms targeting Republican House members in some of these swing districts on guns and immigration? And I think it had an effect.
Well, he's certainly been wiser with his money than some other billionaires, like Tom Steyer, for instance, who has thrown heaps of money at, for instance, electing a Democratic Senate and never made much headway in that goal. His odds and his track record are kind of embarrassing when you look at it. So that would be my one pushback, is that, you know, Michael Bloomberg, all of these guys, when you look at the dollar signs, they do look impressive. But I would emphasize what Kyle said, money is not dispositive. And in fact, it's sometimes it doesn't matter at all. And, you know, Bloomberg has also spent a great deal of money in recent years on his gun campaign. And, you know, there are some states that have moved to tighten their gun laws, but there have been as many states that have moved to expand them. And he certainly has not got anywhere at the federal level. We have a Democratic House that, yes, last week passed a greater background check law and some other new gun restrictions. But importantly, a significant chunk of their own party didn't vote for it, again, because this is an issue that resonates with voters. So you can have gobs of money, but you've got to put it into issues that matter. We'll see what he actually accomplishes in the end.
All right. So we have a couple of other candidates who are getting in. The governor of Washington State, Jay Inslee, who has already said he's basically going to run a one-issue campaign, substantially one issue on climate change, do something about that. John Hickenlooper, former two-term governor of Colorado, centrist. He's in some ways the most interesting entrant so far, from my point of view, Kyle, because the initial rush of candidates really came from the left, and now we're seeing the start of, at least in case of Hickenlooper, and there might be a couple of other people getting in like Joe Biden, Sherrod Brown, who could occupy a more traditional centrist Democratic position. And Hickenlooper comes from a state which is a swing state. He managed to win twice in difficult Republican years. I mean, difficult. Certainly, 2014 was a very difficult year for a Democrat to win re-election, and somehow managed it, and has emerged, as somebody who thinks he can win the Democratic nomination. How do you size up assets and liabilities there?
Well, I think that I agree completely that he's an interesting candidate. He definitely spices up the field, which, as you said, has been very much concentrated on the left so far. But the question is, with Trump in the office and perceived as a weak incumbent, are Democratic primary voters, as we've talked about, going to want the real deal? I mean, Hickenlooper has he's sort of rode the middle ground. He expanded Medicaid under Obamacare, but then in 2016, when there was a Colorado ballot initiative that would have created single-payer health care in the state, he opposed that. He opposed the legalization of marijuana, but has sort of softened on that recently. You know, as of last year, he was saying this is one of the great social experiments of the last 100 years. We all have to keep an open mind. So one weakness could be that he does not have, he's of two minds on some of these issues. And in a primary, that's a problem because primaries attract the most devoted, the most diehard supporters. But in a general election could actually be an asset, because I think some of his ambivalence about some of these issues reflects what voters actually feel broadly.
We're talking about the Democratic presidential race, and you're listening to Potomac Watch from The Wall Street Journal.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Welcome back. I'm Paul Gigot with the Wall Street Journal with Kyle Peterson and Kim Strassel. And Kim, Thoughts on Hickenlooper? I think you know, he had toyed for a while there with John Kasich, potentially the Republican former governor of Ohio, maybe running as a third party candidate, and now he's committed. Hickenlooper is committed to the Democratic nomination, and I would assume, based on what you'd said earlier about Bloomberg, you don't think there's a lot of space there for him in this particular Democratic primary.
Well, here's where I think Hickenlooper has better prospects than a Michael Bloomberg ever would have. And it goes to what Kyle just pointed out, that he's got more of a mixed record on these things. He certainly, in my mind, falls into the moderate lane within the party. But unlike Bloomberg, who he's just a little bit more – Bloomberg's kind of a brusque politician. As I said, he went to out into some of these states and said, oh, you know, Medicare for all, it's a terrible idea. You guys are, you know, what are you smoking? Whereas Hickenlooper is a little bit more subtle here, and his positions are such that they might not entirely alienate a liberal base. So, you know, he did, for instance, oppose the ballot initiative in 2016 in his state on single-payer health care, but he has expanded Medicaid. So there may be some room for him to maneuver among that base. I certainly think that were he to be successful in the primary, that he'd be a far better candidate for Democrats than some of the liberals that are running. And if you look at polls out there, and I saw one in the New York Times talking about how Gallup last year had said that if you ask Americans how they identify themselves, 35% say they're conservative. Another 35% call themselves moderate, and 26 call themselves liberal. And you get a very, very liberal candidate as your flag bearer. I think it really hurts the Democrats, even with a weakened Donald Trump.
Yeah, and I think that Hickenlooper is the kind of candidate, if he got the nomination, he really would appeal to a lot of those swing Republicans who turned against the Trump Republican Party in 2018. I mean, I think they'd feel comfortable voting for him. The question is, I guess, would he be able to mobilize the left? My operating assumption is that anybody the Democrats nominate will be able to mobilize the Democrats, largely because of antipathy to Donald Trump, and that's so strong. So I wouldn't worry so much about that. But it's going to be hard for me to see, Kyle, that Hickenlooper can carve out the space to win. But, yeah, I mean, there is room for a moderate candidate. There's no question about that. And as this race goes on, and I think the Democrats do deserve that kind of a policy debate. And on the policy debate, this gets into climate and fossil fuels. And Hickenlooper, of course, tolerated fracking in the state. He opposed, I think, a referendum or two that would have banned fracking in some jurisdictions in the state. And that gets us to Jay Inslee, the governor of Washington State, who is a climate crusader and has been going to make that his centerpiece. And it gets down to the degree to which climate is becoming almost a litmus test issue inside the Democratic Party. We've seen Mario Cuomo ban it in New York State in anticipation, fracking and shale drilling, Kim, in anticipation that he could run. The question is, can somebody like Hickenlooper, who is not, just want to ban fossil fuels, can he even find the space to run and win in a Democratic Party? Or is now climate a new litmus test like abortion or some of the other cultural issues?
It is becoming the new litmus test. And that's why I think there's problems for Democrats with some of this new freshman class that's come in the House of Democrats, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and others, who are claiming that for younger voters in particular, this will be the defining issue. Now, that is obviously why Inslee is running the campaign he's running. You know, normally candidates, you hope that they run on a more rounded set of policy ideas and an agenda. But he sees this as the best way to get those eyeballs among the very progressive base that are going to be the most ardent voters in all of these primaries and caucuses. So I don't think it's a good place for Democrats to be more broadly, because if you go out and poll Americans, they generally, the majority express some concern about climate change. But when you get down to what it would actually take, in terms of the costs and the changes to their own lives, they become far more skeptical. So this to me strikes me as the Inslee bid as a it's potentially decent politics. It's one strategy, but not necessarily a winning one in the long term. But you're right, Hickenlooper is going to have some issues there because he's not militant on this issue.
Kyle, the point that Kim just made about between goals and means on the climate issue was never more apparent than in Washington State when you had two referenda in recent years on to impose a carbon tax failed.
Right, right. And that's where having a moderate candidate on the debate stage to puncture some of these ideas could be really useful. I mean, Jay Inslee has been governor for a long time and has not been able to get his state to enact the carbon tax that he favors. It has failed twice in two separate referenda, and then he failed to get it through a legislature controlled by Democrats.
And those are the statewide votes weren't even close.
Right, right. And so one of the things that is interesting about his run is that, as you said, he's sort of running a single-issue campaign. His campaign website doesn't even have an issues page. It just has a proposal for a climate agenda. He talks about a new Apollo project to design, invent, and deploy the new clean energy technologies. He says it's going to create millions of new jobs. So it's something for everybody. I mean, there's some usefulness in having somebody on the stage who may be able to say, so we're going to raise the price of energy, we're going to tax people more, we're going to spend it on R&D, and the result of that is that there's going to be more jobs, and you know, it's like a perpetual motion machine.
Well, okay. But climate, I think, is going to be one of those things where we have a big debate in the Democratic Party, and I think that'll be instructive. Let's move briefly here to Joe Biden, who is still on the fence, although more and more hints from his people that Biden is, in fact, leaning toward making a race, even as he is first ran for president. My gosh, I covered his first campaign for president. I hate to admit this, back in 1988. Ancient history. And of course, he ran again in 2008. He's never been a great candidate, Kim. He has always been a better concept than a candidate. Now, of course, he's the elder statesman. He's been a two-term vice president. He has many, many years in the Senate. He's as well known as any Democrat in the country. And he's also, had a. I think he can deliver a very cutting speech. I don't think there's any doubt he would he'd be able to take on Donald Trump. I think he'd be a formidable candidate against Trump. What's the argument for him staying out of the race with his name recognition and his standing?
Well, I think the interesting question about Joe Biden is where does he stand? And this is what is the huge unknown at the moment, as we obviously Joe Biden was in the Senate for a very long time. He was vice president when he was in the Senate. Lots of votes. If anything, by the way, some of those votes could come back to haunt him were he to get into the race. You know, he was very much known for many years as being tough on crime, at least within the Democratic Party. He's voted for various Republican nominees over the years, et cetera, things that in today's modern leftist Democratic Party are considered anathema. But it's less clear where he stands on the kind of new Democratic Party ideas. And he gave a speech last year at Northwestern University where he revealed some of his new positions, as it were. He's these days in favor of free higher education. He wants to dramatically raise the minimum wage. Those are both things that the Democratic Party is cohered around, but less clear on things like taxes, for instance. He's talked about closing loopholes in the tax code for the wealthy, but notably, no one's ever heard him actually calling for higher tax rates at the top. It's unknown where he stands on Medicare for all or healthcare in general at the moment, or on climate change. He was very critical of Donald Trump for pulling out out of the Paris Agreement, but in terms of his own views on the carbon tax or the Green New Deal, no one knows where he stands. So it's hard to know where he would occupy the space here beyond the fact that he has enormous, as you say, name recognition and is the elder statesman. That is undoubtedly what's behind the fact that he does well in these polls, even though he's not in. But whether or not that would still be the case when he got in, it's just unclear.
Well, I think he's done a decent job, though, of moving with the party. The moment that crystallizes this for me is, remember, he came out for gay marriage before President Obama did, sort of jumped the gun there. While I agree with Kim that he's not quite clear where he is on some of these new issues, I think you can be sure that he will be wherever he thinks he needs to be in order to get the nomination, if that's what he decides he wants to do. But what I think is interesting is looking a little bit deeper in some of the polling. So the Morning Consult poll. So he's leading it. But what's more interesting, I think, is people who like Sanders, they say Joe Biden is their second choice. People who like Kamala Harris, they say Joe Biden is their second choice. People who like Beto O'Rourke say Joe Biden is their second choice. And so there's some depth to that where he may be acceptable to all wings of the party in ways that some of these more narrow candidates aren't. And particularly among black voters, I mean, Bernie Sanders, who is second in the polling, really struggled with black voters in 2016. He lost them by a huge margin to Hillary Clinton. And Biden seems to be doing pretty well there. So, I mean, that could be another advantage. As they go forward, I mean, it's early, anything could happen, but the polling does suggest some breadth and some depth to his support.
And there's some tension in the Democratic Party now as among strategists as they try to talk about what's a strategy for winning the White House in 2020. Do they go back to try to focus on the upper Midwest states that Trump won for the first time by a Republican in a long time, Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Iowa, try to win those states, and that would speak to Biden with his appeal to union workers and white working class? Or do the Democrats try to play to a strategy that more goes to the ascendant, the so-called party of the ascendant, as that was once called under Obama, which was you go with the growing populations in the South, minority populations in Florida, Georgia, Arizona, Colorado, and even Texas, if you can make that competitive, and go with a populist, minority-based woman strategy of the kind, and you don't focus on the upper Midwest. There are two competing factions, Kim, in the party that they disagree about which way to go.
Right, and you see this playing out right now debate within the party about whether or not they hold their convention in 2020 in Miami, down catering to that latter audience you just mentioned, the kind of multicultural vote, as it were, or whether they hold it in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and which is very much about that more blue-collar labor union faction of the party. And there was a great piece in the Washington Examiner today in which Wisconsin Democrats were complaining that they get neglected too frequently by the party, and that if they don't get the convention there, it will be a further slight to them. But that's the big choice they have to make. And that is supposedly, you know, remember all the discussion after the last election among Democrats about how they had lost that region and how they needed to come up with their own strategy to go after those Trump blue-collar voters, the forgotten men and women, as it were. And so that was what put a lot of focus on Biden, because the idea that, you know, good old Joe, he would be the person to make that sale. But they have not yet decided, and clearly, that is the way to go. And I see, too, a huge amount of tension between those two wings of the party. And the question for me is there a candidate that can unite the two? And I find that harder to believe.
That's interesting. So, Kim, just to wrap up here, do you think Biden gets in?
I do think he gets in. There's been a lot of moves, as you said. Most recently, he just brought onto his team Cristobal Alex, who's a well-known Latino operative, works for the Latino Victory Fund. But they've made some other hires like that. And there are whispers coming out that he is likely to get in.
And Kyle, what do you think?
I agree. There's been scattered reports that he's hiring some people in South Carolina, hiring some people in New Hampshire. He said recently that his family, that was his main concern. He wanted to make sure that they were on board, and all of his family thinks that they want him to do it. So the last I heard is he could decide as late as April. There are some other candidates who are maybe holding their breath, waiting to see what he does. But it may not come for a while yet.
Well, I agree with you. You're going to make it 3-0 here for Biden getting in. And I think the signal that with Bloomberg getting out creates more of a running room for Biden to run towards a more unifying party figure that can appeal to both wings of the party, potentially, not entirely. But I think he's and I think Bernie and Elizabeth Warren both are going to be wary of Joe Biden. All right. Thank you, Kim. Thank you, Kyle. And thank you all for listening. We'll be back later in the week with another edition of Potomac Watch.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.